Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. How can we build workplaces where women aren't just included, but able to grow and lead without shrinking themselves? Today, Dane is joined by Andrea Muhammad, a courageous leader with over 20 years of experience building high-performing teams and driving organizational growth. As COO and co-founder of Quantum Bloom, she helps develop and retain diverse technical talent through pioneering early career leadership programs combining curriculum, coaching, and community. In this episode, they'll talk about what it really takes for workplaces to retain early career women in STEM and why investing in people is still leadership's most overlooked responsibility. They explore how the next generation is demanding more human-centered practices, how DEIB backlash is exposing performative culture, and why courageous leadership isn't about control. It's about creating space for people to stretch, take risks, and grow. Andrea also shares how her team is building a support ecosystem to help women stay confident and remain in industries where they're still underrepresented, not by waiting for top-down culture change, but by building momentum from the ground up. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group, and today I'm joined by Andrea Muhammad. Andrea is the COO and co-founder of Quantum Bloom. And we've been having a great pre-show conversation about the state of the workplace and you know, our hopes for a more human-centric approach to teamwork in the future. So welcome, Andrea.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited for this conversation.
Me too. So tell us a little bit more about you. How did you come to be doing all of this cool work?
Yeah, so... You know, if I kind of think about the origin story for Andrea, I am a first generation college student. I was in places often where I never felt like I belonged. It's like being a first time college student. I was a PhD student. It's like I ended up at Duke. Eventually, that was the place that I got my graduate degree from. And, you know, and it's like, and you go through a series of sort of life events and get yourself through them, and the rearview mirror starts to become really clear. As you're going through things, things aren't necessarily as crystal clear as that rearview mirror. And it's like, and I sort of learned how to find belonging in myself in places that I shouldn't, that I wasn't ever really expected to be in. And I found that was something that I had to sort of sort through careers too, where as a woman and a very strong-willed woman with a lot of perspective, it wasn't obvious and it wasn't usually automatic that I was welcomed into a lot of environments and had to face a lot of challenges. And where I'm at now as the co-founder and COO of Quantum Bloom, we focus on helping early career women in STEM in particular at this critical transition point from college into their first full-time jobs. And
wonderful.
What we see there is that while STEM demand is growing at rates we've never seen before, as all sort of industries become more and more technical, we're not seeing STEM talent pursue and persist in those careers even after we get them through the education pipeline, in particular with women, and we're seeing a generational effect. And a lot of that has to do with belonging and inclusion in those work environments. And so when I look in the rearview mirror, it makes complete sense why I'm doing what I'm doing now, because... it's like, I don't want this next generation to have some of those barriers and challenges, or not for them to not have the tools to overcome those barriers and challenges. We don't have to all go through the school of hard knocks. We can take the wisdom of older folks and bring that to the next generation and help them have smoother, more thriving careers.
I love that. And it is fascinating as you think about some of the demographics right now. I think we've got more women graduating from postgraduate degrees now than men. We've got huge demand in the STEM fields. And yet the way that workplaces and academic institutions, for that matter, operate, very hierarchical, very archaic in the way that the human behaviors happen. I've definitely had a number of female colleagues with PhDs that have, you know, not continued down pathways as you touch on. And I do think it's purely human dynamics. It's got nothing to do with intellect or capability.
Usually the opposite, right? It's what we're seeing. So for 40 years, women have been outpacing men in earning bachelor's degrees, and that gap keeps getting wider. And unfortunately, in the space of STEM, the higher your degree attainment, the lower your likelihood to persist in those fields. So
interesting.
PhD level women are less likely to stay in their areas of study relative to bachelor's level women in technology. And so it's a real, when you think about it, it's a real market inefficiency from like a economic perspective, that you've invested so much into your education only to then not see the fruits of all that education in the continuation of those studies and that those areas. So it's really, and a lot of people don't really fully see a lot of the data around this. It's like there's sort of, except when you start talking to women in marginalized communities, it's like talk to any one of them and they'll tell you about their lived experience in either academia. You know, it doesn't really matter if it's academia, if it's industry, or if it's government. It's like there is, the challenges generally are similar across all those different sectors.
Yeah. I wonder if anything there has got to do with sort of a glass ceiling, that if you've got a bachelor's degree, you can have a suitable entry point and progression without running into some of the more toxic leadership behaviors that may exist for PhD candidates to be running into.
Yeah, that's something that I experienced throughout my career too, is that I felt like I assumed that the higher I went, the easier it would get. And the opposite actually was true. It's like the higher I went, the bigger the target was on my back. And I think that when you don't have a lot of influence or power, there's a lot of extraction of your skills and capabilities, and you can be a rock star and they value it. And then as you go up that hierarchy, and if you are still that rock star type employee, the reality is that most organizations are still not ready for really powerful women. And we are a very threatening group of people at this sort of juncture. And we're seeing this happen. And when that, you know, and when these sort of dynamics play out, you know, you're seeing an exodus of women at the top. You're seeing early career women who have, I think, a language that my generation didn't, around bias and barriers and patriarchy and things like that, where they are easy, they're faster to sort of see the handwriting on the wall. They're much more quick to vote with their feet, where my generation was kind of primed to just put up with it and to continue to think that we were the problem and we needed to go fix ourselves. And so I think there's a whole lot of shifting in some of the perceptions, but I think at all stages of those sort of hierarchies, it's like there are continuing barriers that don't make sense from from business. You know, it's like we know that more diverse, inclusive teams where people feel like they belong outperform, right? So these aren't really around business economics, right? And it really is about power structures and dynamics that have been around since the beginning of time.
Yeah. It's as soon to be the father of three girls, it's a worry, and it's something that I think we've all got friends and family who have experienced, but I'm also hopeful that it's something that we can really start addressing right now, regardless of politics and administration choices right now. You know, the fact that it is very much about power structures and human dynamics means that you don't have to give it a title. You just got to get on with addressing how teams are leveraging great talent, how we're creating the environment for, for flourishing and for thriving, no matter what someone might look like or how they may identify. And that there's a great, one of my favorite podcast guests and friends, Craig Weber, he did a really cool book on conversational capacity. And one of the quotes that he had in the book was that, particularly in the scientific realm, You know, if you've got a very high power leadership team and they're not actually inviting the experience and capabilities and brilliance of the team members that they've hired, they're stealing from the company. And I think that's very strong and very appropriate language. I'm sure you've seen some evidence of that.
Yeah. You know, you start to see, and I don't have the specifics on the data on this, but when you look at CEO pay increase relative to the average worker, you know, when you talk about stealing, right? It's, you know, it's so disproportionate. And that doesn't mean that those CEOs at the top are that much more brilliant, that much more capable, that much more connected to be really earning that. And they're earning it on the backs, right, of all these employees that continue to sort of lose, they're losing power, right? It's like you see like this kind of power dynamic happening where we have the workforce and then the top of sort of the food chains that are, you know, rolling back very human-centric policies, you know, and I think that that's a signal of, you know, this, the top feeling like they have the ability to sort of exploit sort of their workforces and prioritize different things that are not necessarily around people. And it, I always find it ironic when organizations talk about, you know, our people are our greatest assets. And then you peel the onion and you look at the way that the people are treated and it's like, and that doesn't seem to hold water. So there's a lot of disconnect between the way companies talk about people and their human capital and the ways that they actually behave. And I think that there's a bit of fair weatherness that happens in this too, where things continue to sort of shift and move. And I think what we're seeing now with the next generation, which does give me hope, is the next generation sees through this. And they really are seeing sort of when organizations have a lot of performative sort of stances on things, and then the way that they behave, and the way that they behave doesn't necessarily line up to what they say or what they state their values are. And I think what I love about this next generation is they're just unwilling to talk, like tolerate that lack of connection between words and action. And I think that's awesome because I think in mass, that generation will start to force organizations to be better, right?
I think you're right. I think in two ways. One, they absolutely have the awareness of some of the biases and the dynamics that need to change. And they'll call anyone to the mat. Doesn't matter if it's a 22-year-old intern, that they'll call the CEO to the mat if they step off base, which is brilliant. And then secondly, there's something about this new generation, and I think it's starting to move upstream and impact all of us for the better, where they're willing to just tear up the rule book and redesign how we get stuff done. A perfect example is like the way that they're using video to kind of create new things, do things better, share information. Like they're able to just achieve so much more impact in a far less formal way that can just expand very quickly, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, their voice, right? They're the digital natives and I love this about this generation, right? It's like they're digital natives. They have tools and resources to do things without a lot of money and backing. It's like they're ultimate hackers, right? On being able to want to get something done and figure out how to get it done. And they can create a movement and create a following and all sorts of things versus all the time it would have taken in the past without, you know, the technology or the tools or the platforms to disseminate broadly, right? And so I think that is powerful to see. I also think, you know, through some of those content creation places, it's disappointing to me, right? When I don't see corporate America and traditional employers kind of stepping up and becoming what the next generation wants, because this generation can make money doing 100 different things that are not really creating a ton of societal value, but that can earn a living. And that's really disappointing to me because I want this generation using all that ingenuity and kind of resourcefulness to do things that are going to make the world better, not necessarily just sell a product or be an influencer or whatever it might be. And I think that the best leaders are starting to see that they really need to become magnets for talent and listen. And I think that we all start to benefit. I don't even care what generation we're in. It's like when I see young people want to have true work-life harmony, it might be annoying that your employee like wants to peel out at 3 o'clock because their favorite yoga instructor is at the 3 o'clock class. Yeah. And yet I think about, wow, maybe I should go do my Peloton thing with Rebecca Kennedy at that time or whatever it might be. And I think there's things to learn about how our rigid structures of the way that work is supposed to get done is maybe not the most effective or efficient way for work to get done. And we need to think more broadly of those things. And I think hopefully we start moving in that direction. But what you continue to see that those culture challenges, right? When we saw, you know, the pandemic and everybody went home and worked in offices like this with kids and cats, which we talked about in our pre-call. And yet now you see sort of the pendulum swing back where it's like, you know, executives hate to see their buildings and assets unoccupied and we bring them back. And there's a lot to be said, don't get me wrong, for like collaboration and FaceTime and those types of things. But there was a lot to be said by going home too and giving people time back in their lives and flexibility back into their lives. And they're, you know, I don't know if we found the equilibrium on that. But I do think that there's a lot of opportunity for rethinking the future of work and starting from the place of like, what do we actually have to accomplish? What is, you know, all the different stakeholders actually need? But it's like when you have these mismatched power structures where it's like you continue to see sort of the resistance to some of the progress. I love to see young people and they can do stuff so fast. My son and his buddies, he's 15 now, but this was last year. They like started a landscaping business without any parents' help. And they had a website, they had swag, they were knocking on doors, so cool. They had their market and their segment was the retirement community. And it was just amazing to watch these 14-year-olds, you know, build a business. And they were doing amazing. And then they'd be like, we want to go buy this power washer. It's like in the town over. We found it on, you know, Facebook Marketplace. And they're using their money to buy better equipment. I'm like, this is genius what you guys are doing. Brilliant. Right? Yeah. And I wasn't starting businesses when I was 14 like that. I might have been babysitting, right? I have a woman that I mentor now, and she's graduating. And she's starting an LLC this summer between her undergrad and her graduate studies because she wants to be able to just go out on her own and do her own social media work. And she's got a whole bunch of clients already lined up. And fantastic. I'm like, got an LLC at 22, right?
Yeah. I love to see it. I love that choice of words of hacking or hackers, because the reality is, traditionally, and this goes back to power structures, traditionally people have felt like you couldn't operate a business without credentials and a bank account and all of these things, where the reality is, if you really want to do something now, there are things that you can just start doing immediately, and you can start manifesting those ideas and hopes into action and team members and customers. Very quickly, like prototyping is on hyperspeed. And then once you actually see that little bit of muscle memory, that little bit of success, I think it really multiplies, not only within the team, but, you know, across communities, which is, that is exciting.
You know, it reminds me of a conversation. I was part of this earlier this week. So I live in the Raleigh-Durham area of North Carolina, and the startup ecosystem held Raleigh-Durham Startup Week, which was like five days of events. It was fantastic. And what was really interesting, I was in the audience on a panel where there was a panel talking about the future of venture capital. And one of the panelists said, you know, that on the entrepreneur side, they need far less capital to get started, right? Yeah. And it's changing some of the dynamics in early stage investing, because you can do so much with so little money, right? Where you don't need to go, you know, give away equity and borrow and do all these types of things. when you've got all these different subscription services, or you can code or AI or whatever it is, and you can kind of like piece together, you know, minimum viable products without having to have cash infusions. And it's faster, it's more efficient, it puts more power back into the hands of that entrepreneur to be able to, like, you know, bootstrap themselves longer and not be given away their equity in order to be able to scale and grow. And I think that's a similar thing to what's happening, not just in those of us that are trying to build scalable businesses that employ folks, but those that also want to just be solo entrepreneurs and be able to piece together and gig or do whatever they want to do. It's like they can do that so easily now.
I would love to see, for a time I got really excited about blockchain before I really knew what it was, but the concept was what excited me. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if rather than going to a VC firm to get money to start your business, you could go and find your first 100 customers, and as they paid revenue for your product, they would also get on the cap table. And as your employees did work, they would also get on the cap table. But if you could create this ledger that showed who created value along the way, because we often forget in the startup community that early customers create huge value because they're giving you feedback on your product, and that just shapes you. They'll refer other customers to you. I just think, there's something about the way that you raised that question earlier around senior team members, CEOs, you said, extracting all of this value out of the company and shareholders at a disproportionate rate to team members. But I think that's true of the whole ecosystem of business.
It really is. And I think, you know, I mean, not to get too up in the like sky on thing, but I, you know, you think about capitalism in general, and it's like, and the growth at all costs. And we're kind of hitting a point where we see the real problems from that orientation. And yet there hasn't been another viable kind of model outside of traditional capitalism that's emerged. But when you start looking, and this is another thing with the next generation, right? They're really values oriented. It's like they're ecosystem oriented. They care about the planet. And, you know, you start to see these macro kind of tensions and how are these things going to shake out? But, you know, growth at all costs, I think, has run its course. It's like the costs are just getting too high. And, you know, you see companies like, say, NVIDIA, right, where this company is just growing like crazy. And then because, you know, Wall Street says you have to keep growing at that pace to be deemed investable. It's like it just, you know, it defies common sense. Some of these things that you can constantly have that rate of, you know, that rate of growth. And then the question then becomes, well, if financial growth is not the measure of success, can we find ways to create that the value gets sort of assigned by things in addition to that financial success? Do you know what I mean? And we had, you know, all these things around CSR and ESG and those types of things, which, again, in the current climate, there's a backlash to some of these things where we're back to, you know, bottom line, you know, and even then it's like, I don't think we're actually behaving. So I, in my business, I sit there, I'm like, I wish these companies would start behaving like the capitalists they're supposed to when it comes to people, because if they did, it's like they would be investing in early talent. They would be investing in retention because turnover is really expensive. They'd recognize that. It's like, I don't care if you have 500 people waiting for that one person's job. It's like they're not expendable, and it's not without cost every time you turn them over, right?
Well, it's and like 2.5 times salary. So it's absolutely like immeasurable. Yeah.
And yet we see this all the time. Boom, bust, like, you know, feast or famine kind of mentality and this cyclical nature, which creates an enormous amount of uncertainty for workers. It's like they don't want to work in places where it's like, are we laying off next quarter, and then the quarter after they're going to be hiring again? You know, so you start looking at some of these things and it's like, it's a lot of churn and disruption that has to fundamentally be costing companies a ton of money, but it's hard to put your finger on it.
It is. But I think we now have the technology. Another podcast guest, Maria Scarangella, who had a great career with Geico, she started building out a ROI framework for talent and the whole talent life cycle. And she's bringing in a new business to market, which I'm excited to see, because I think the technology is there now. We can even take and create data out of qualitative analysis, which will start to show you, to your point, hey, these are companies that truly invest in their people, that are values driven, that are thinking about the ecosystem. And that should shift. Maybe the contrarian view right now that I'm playing with is that maybe the backlash against ESG and DEIB and you name it is a good thing, because now all of the washing that was happening, everyone saying they do it but not really acting, is gone. And you can really go out and find the companies that believe in it and are making meaningful steps and progress. And hopefully they're the companies that we should be investing in, putting our time and energy and our careers in, buying products from. I'm optimistic about that.
Oh, I think we're seeing the beginnings of that, right? We're seeing the beginnings of that. You saw we're seeing what's happened to the stock prices of Tesla and Target, and what's happening at Costco on the other hand. Or one of my favorite exemplars is Elf Cosmetics. They are one of the best cases of like what inclusive, human-centric sort of people strategies can do for a company. It's like they're growing like crazy quarter over quarter. They have like 75% of their board is women. It's, they've got some other great percentage of diverse folks. It's like, and when you hear the CEO or the CMO or the CFO talk, it's like you can tell they live and breathe this ethos of like such a human-centric sort of culture that they've built. And, I look at that and I'm like fans, and I follow the CEO on LinkedIn and stuff like that. And I'm like, I'm a customer. I'm like, I heard him speak at Duke one time, learned about sort of that culture. I've got an 11-year-old daughter. It's like, we're buying Elf Cosmetics, right? I'm going to put my money where there's values alignment. And I think more and more of us, one of the great things about technology, media, all these types of things, influencers, whatever, it's like you have access to understand, who's really living and breathing values, who's not. There's a lot of information out there that allows us to be more informed consumers. And I think that's also happening from the employee side, right? They have more and more information to be informed on where they want to work. And I think the companies that are going to win are the ones that are really taking this human-centric kind of perspective, even as the world gets more and more technical.
Yeah.
There's so much opportunity in that space. And I agree on like the washing, right? It's helping, people have asked me, it's like, oh my gosh, Andrea, it's like you and Anne are building a business that's focused on supporting women in a climate when DE&I programming is going away. It's like, how's that going? And I'm like, oh, I think it's awesome. I said, because it's helping us disqualify leads and candidates very quickly, right? In the past, it's like everybody kind of would take the call. It's like, is this performative? Are they really willing to solve the problem, interested in solving the problem, all those types of things. And now when we're working with organizations, there's a lot of cutting through that noise, and we know pretty quickly that it's like, no, they're on this side of history and they're a more viable candidate for us to be able to continue to pursue and add value to. So it's like there is some help that's coming in that way that you're starting to see and sift through those that are potentially aligned to your mission and values and those that are not.
I love that soundbite too, those that are on this side of history, because it really is a pivotal moment right now. That's a great call to action for anyone who's out there leading a team, building a brand, thinking about where they're going to go and work next or invest. It's real.
Yeah. For sure. It's like, I think about, what's happened, right? And how you can either choose for it to be, especially for organizations like mine, working in talent, working with specific audiences and women and technology and things like that. And, it could be really deflating for a lot of people. And for me, it's fuel on the fire. I'm like, it is fuel on the fire. It's like we're entering an era where there's going to be, on the whole, less structured support for those underrepresented folks in your organizations that need it most. And we have to continue to provide that, though, for the women, for people of color. Like, their demand isn't going down because of what's happening. It's going up. And that means we need to have solutions on both sides of that. We're primarily focused on a B2B offering where we want to be involved with the companies that are interested in retaining their early career talent. And at the same time, we meet the market and we meet consumers and provide a slightly different offering, because women, even if they don't have the support of their organizations, are going to need more community, more, you know, tools, resources, knowledge on how to lead themselves in the realities of today's workplace.
I love the on Quantum Bloom. I love the tagline there: bold, brilliant, and boundless. So how are you bringing that to life, whether it's in the B2B or the B2C context? What does that look like for one of your customers or community members?
Yeah. So it's like, when I think about the typical pathways for, you know, highly competent, ambitious women, what happens without intervention is generally a cheese grater effect, where they shrink, right? They get smaller. They start to internalize systemic bias. They've been told that they're the problem, go fix themselves. It's like, and they, you know, there's so much data now that tells us, you know, about the disparities in which, you know, women are evaluated, like how we apply for jobs, how we negotiate, all those types of things. And so it's a real opportunity for helping very early career women never fall into that kind of way of thinking, to really help them maintain sort of a sense of self and self-awareness and like confidence, right? That they don't ever get to that point of self-doubt, that they, even if the whole world is sort of saying you don't belong being an astrophysicist, that within them, they're like, screw that. It's like, I belong anywhere I want to be. And I have the tools and resources and coaching and mentorship and community that are standing behind me, like, and like continuing to urge me on in that journey, right? And to me, that's what, like, it's like being able to like be authentic, not adaptive to every environment, to know yourself, believe in yourself, stand in the face of, you know, the, you know, tyranny or whatever it might be. Because I think that sense of courage is something that I think has been one of the things that does hold women back, is that they allow themselves to be conditioned to think they don't deserve better, or that they need to, you know, be grateful for the scraps that they're given. And so to me, bold, brilliant, is imbalance is the exact opposite of that. It's like, it's awesome when someone says you can't, that I have a whole army of young women that say, watch me.
I must introduce you to Maria, who I mentioned earlier, who had that great career at Geico, because she shared with me, we were at the Transform conference in March, and she shared this great story. She'd met Warren Buffett like 40 times, because obviously that was a Berkshire Hathaway business. And they'd had some really interesting dialogue, her and the CEO, over time. She got given some huge projects to do, like building and scaling new teams, and set some ridiculous goals. Her boss at the time set her this ridiculous goal, and she went out there and she just narrowly missed it. And she came in and she was upset, and she recounted the story to me, and she said, and I went in and I said, I was upset. And he goes, oh, you blew away my expectations like 2x. He goes, but to lean on your word, boundless. He was like, why would I limit it by saying, just go and do this? He was just like, I threw a crazy number out there because I just wanted to see what you were capable of going and doing. And we need more like allies and leaders like that, that don't set limitations or caps on our abilities, and that encourage, you know, female leaders or any leaders or any team members for that matter, to just go out there and try and just be their best and boldest and most brilliant selves.
Yeah. And I think it moves beyond individuals too. Right. Yeah. I work a lot in the semiconductor space, particularly because they're facing an expected 100,000 person worker shortage with all of the policy changes on bringing semiconductor manufacturing to the U.S. And I'm on a team that's working on a semiconductor workforce roadmap. And one of our early conversations was around the cyclical nature of their business. And you can see it, right? Peaks, valleys. And when you start looking at what's it going to take to be a magnet for talent into that industry, it's like, you know, we can either consider the peaks and valleys as a fixed state, that that is just the way that it is, or we can get creative and start thinking about how do we smooth those peaks and valleys. We may never get rid of it. And we had a real conversation because it's like people on the team were kind of like, yeah, it just is what it is. It's like, you know, it is. And I'm like, or we can say it is what it is today. And there is a way to be different. And we could paint a picture about what it would take to get there. That doesn't mean we're all going to choose to go there. But let's imagine and allow ourselves to imagine an ideal future state. And then we can come back in and say all the ways that that's going to be too expensive, too hard, whatever it might be, but let's at least allow ourselves to go there on what does great look like. We can always talk ourselves down from that. But if we don't aspire, if we don't have that ambition, it's like we're never going to do the breakthrough work that some of these industries frankly needs.
I think that's brilliant. I was at the collaboration in the gig economy conference that staffing industry analysts put on. It would have been Dallas. It would have been 22. So a few years ago now. And they had Tim Sanders come on, who actually spent some time at Upwork as well. And he's a great thought leader and keynote speaker. And he started talking about getting rid of brainstorms, which your semiconductor example just reminded me of, and introducing question storms. And it's all about the power of, hey, what questions should we be thinking about solving? Not what can we do or what have we done or what are we capable of doing, but you know, what might it look like to solve for peaks and valleys in workforce demand? What might it look like to redesign the way that we do work so that we are less seasonal in certain, you know, elements of our maintenance program or whatever that is? I've taken that tool away and used it in so many team settings because it's phenomenal when you use questions to reframe the reality and you move away from assumptions and biases which naturally exist in, you know, status quo business as usual operating environments.
Yeah. I think the courage, right? The courage to imagine a better, right? And I've been a strategist for a long time and it's like, and I've often used the framing of like current state to future state. And your path is going to be so dictated by how ambitious you are in what that future state might look like, right?
Yeah.
And that, you know, and so it's like, you know, when I think about like the best, highest performing teams, ambition is a core element of what those teams have, is that they are the people. I have on my wall, one of my employees gave it to me. It's like this quote, Steve Jobs about the crazy ones, right?
I love that one.
Yeah, it's one of the best quotes. And it was a holiday gift from one of my employees one time. And she's like, Andrea, you're one of the crazy ones, right? And and it's like, and the thing that I love about that is that I had a team under me and I wanted to inspire that they can be the crazy ones too. And to get to that place of like that ambition or being wildly sort of optimistic or can do or whatever it might be, it's like, you need people to show up authentically. You need them not holding back. You know, so there's all these sorts of things where if we want to have the breakthroughs, there's a whole bunch of stuff that we need to be doing to like foster the openness and the authenticity and all those types of things that sometimes is just frankly missing from teams that are stuck into these patterns of like, you know, risk avoidance and conformity and assimilation and all those types of things that are just holding us all back from truly innovation that, you know, can not just be good for business, but maybe even be good for humanity and society and the environment and all those types of things. Because if we're only solving for good for business, that's not my ambition in the world, is that we only are padding people's pockets. It's like, how can our wild ambition also serve, you know, not an or, but an and? Right.
Yeah.
And I think we need people that have that much gumption to say that we can serve business and we can serve humanity and we can serve Mother Earth all at the same time. But the, you know, many, many things will come at you saying, no, you can't and whatever. But it's the people that say, watch me, that do it. Right.
Yeah. Right? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that crazy ones video. I love this. You've continued to use this word courage, and it's, I think it is, it's real. It's very necessary in the world that we live in, and breaking through those barriers, and whether it's technological breakthroughs or social breakthroughs. And it makes me think, you know, as you go in as Quantum Bloom and work with these customers, are you working at the employee level to give them the skills and the coaching and the mindset to go and ask those questions, be curious, be courageous? Or are you working with leadership teams to coach them on how to create the conditions, or is it a combination of both? I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, so we have avoided the top-down culture change. We've got centuries before that actually happens.
Yeah.
But what we are doing is a bottom-up ecosystem approach. So what we deliver that's very unique to other learning and development providers is it's an ecosystem of development that includes both creating courage and agency and, you know, self-knowing in the individual, right? That they're equipped for the realities of the workplace, while also providing community and support. So women are put into cohorts. They get coaching by ICF certified coaches in both group dynamics and one-on-one. I don't know about you, but if I was 25 and had access to a coach, I would
Amazing.
Have had a very different early career and future career. Amazing. And then we impact that woman's environment by requiring companies that sponsor women also commit to her manager being involved in the programming, because we know people join companies and quit bosses. And you can have a company that has an amazing culture and you have a terrible boss, and that's your limiter, right? And vice versa, you could have a great boss in a terrible culture and you can thrive, right? So the dynamic between employee and manager is critical. So those managers also get coaching in our program. They get full access to the curriculum. We're creating the conditions for women and their managers to have crucial conversations, not just about work products, but work experience. Because the reality is most managers have also been underinvested in their leadership development. They don't have the tools or resources or language to be inclusive.
It's a crunch. Yeah, I agree.
And so we provide that. And then the companies also provide in-company mentors, because so many studies tell us the importance of mentorship. And you can get a mentor anywhere, but having one that's in your company that understands that organization's culture, opportunities, and to be able to connect that woman's ambition. Yeah. And so it's the ecosystem is the individual, the manager, the mentor, and then that sponsor is involved in the programming as well. And we're providing data and engagement and all sorts of stuff to continue to show effectiveness as we go help reach their goals, right? So from the company perspective, they're looking at retention as a key driver. And then for the individuals, we both want women sticking to careers in technology, and we want them to move toward promotion readiness. So our program lasts up to 3 years, because women don't advance at the same rate as men, and we need to stay with them to get them to that kind of transition point from individual contributor up to manager too.
It sounds like a brilliant program, very complete.
Yes.
And it reminds me of this. There's so many former podcast guests and friends that you may already be following, but I must connect you with them. I don't know if you've seen any of Jenny Wood's work, her new book, Wild Courage.
No.
She started a program at Google called Own Your Career, and she was bringing a lot of these kind of approaches, not with the same structure that you've done with the coaching and the mentoring piece, but a lot of really good tactical structure for that. She was great. I think that ties in really neatly with your work. There's also a gentleman who was on the show, Leo Battari, who wrote the book Peer Innovation, and he talked about the power of groups beside teams. And it sounds like your cohorts are leveraging some of that value. And it's so safe, because there is a psychological safety that you can go and talk to other professionals like you that are having experiences where it's not a charged environment talking to a boss or a colleague, which is fascinating. And then I was on stage at Transform with Mita Malik, who is just about to release her new book called The Devil Emails at Midnight, What Good Leaders Can Learn from Bad Bosses. Mm-hmm. And that should be part of some of your reading on the curriculum too, because she covers these 13 bad bosses. One of which was herself, actually, which is interesting. She hasn't told me which one yet. But it's fascinating content. It's very accessible through story. And you know, as a young female professional coming up in big brand world, I think she had some of those experiences too. So I immediately get it, the way you explain that program. I'm very encouraged that you're out there doing that work.
Whenever we talk about it, it's like, you know, invariably, it's like, especially women of a certain age are like, oh, if I would have had this. And, you know, it's a paradigm shift for organizations to even think about investing in this way in its youngest talent. Most of the time when you're eligible for coaching or leadership development or whatever, you're already in a succession plan. You're deemed high potential, right? You're at a stage. And unfortunately, for women in technology, if you wait, they're gone. So by the age of 30, 68% of women in STEM have left STEM careers, right? Yeah. It used to be that we lost women at 35. Half of all women by 35 were gone, and we're seeing a generational shift where it's going left, right? And so, and 20% of those women with STEM degrees leave STEM entirely in the first 12 months, right? Yeah, so they're landing in environments that are, you know, not hospitable to them, right? And again, it's bad for women. They're not participating in the jobs of the future. It's bad for companies. That turnover is really expensive, and they already have Gen Z turnover regardless of industry or gender, right? It's bad for society because we don't have that diversity in creating the products and solutions and experiences that represent all of us, right? So if we can sort of shift left and intervene before we create the exodus and before we, you know, I think that that's a real opportunity. It's just a paradigm shift, right? Where we're kind of creating a category. We're not creating a category with coaching or mentoring, but for an audience, this kind of holistic programming doesn't exist.
It's brilliant. And the other thing that it makes me think of, because we've lived through this era where the middle managers, you touched on it earlier, they're getting crunched. They didn't get invested in. And the fact that you're able to come in from the ground up is super powerful, because those middle managers who are busy are actually being supported from below, rather than, oh, here's another initiative that I've got to roll out in my busy day. So I think that's fascinating. I'd certainly love to find some opportunities to collaborate and bring some of that into my teams and customer environments as well.
Well, we can definitely follow up after this.
Good. I've had a wonderful time having this conversation. It's a great end to my week. I'm sure our listeners are going to love tuning in. If any of them want to find you, find Quantum Bloom, you know, where do they look, Andrea?
Yeah, we're quantumbloom.com. We are a lucky startup that has a .com. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. We have some growing Instagram, Facebook kind of presence with some of our interns. And my business partner, her name is Anne Hungate. She's the mastermind behind this. She's also super involved on LinkedIn and creating community in that space. So that's where you can find us.
Awesome. Well, thank you for making the time to share your important work and experiences. And I look forward to following up.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dane. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,